Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.
This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a touch with the get on. Welcome to the best 15 minutes or so in the universe. It is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Mark has some breaking legal news hot off the skillet as we lay down this recording. Mark,
well, we've got this guy Brett who does a wonderful job of kind of preparing and surveying the legal landscape and everything. And then what always happens recently is 10 minutes before the show, something significant happens. So I think I'll toss it to Gary to kind of give us a summary.
Well, we have a video here. Why don't we just start off with that? Because that gives a pretty good outline, I think.
Good.
Breaking news to tell you about now. The January 6th committee investigation, there is a brand new batch of subpoenas. They include big names, Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, Boris Epstein, and Sidney Powell, who, of course, fronted Donald Trump's A-team, legal team, in the fight to overturn the election results in several key swing states by falsely claiming widespread voter fraud all over the country. Of course, as we've been discussing, there was none. Committee Chairman Benny Thompson writes in a letter released just a few minutes ago this, quote, "The Select Committee is looking into the causes that contributed to the violence on January 6, including attempts to promote unsupported claims of election fraud and pressure campaigns to overturn the 2020 election results."
Pause right there. Now, look, Adam and I may be on different sides of the ideological aisle. But can we unpack that for a second? Because, first of all, Rudy Giuliani, attorney-client privilege. Jenna Ellis, executive privilege. Sidney Powell, attorney-client privilege. Boris, probably a combination of the two. Now, I have a question. Did you see what the chairman of the committee said they want to now explore?
No.
Repeat that again, Gary, because this is why the Democrats are the worst at messaging.
Reported claims of election fraud and pressure campaigns to overturn the 2020 election results. The four individuals we have subpoenaed today advanced unsupported theories about election fraud, pushed efforts to overturn the election results, or were in direct contact.
For 1 second, because we've subpoenaed today advanced unsupported theories, pushed efforts to overturn or in more direct contact. Now, they also said, I think, in that same thing, do you have it, Gary, where something about what caused the violence? So they're going to try to link up the unsupported theories with the cause of the violence. This plays right into the Republican narrative that this has become a politicized committee and harkens back to what I was saying a couple of episodes before, that if you really wanted to get to the root of this, what you would have done is appointed a committee a la what we did on 9/11, a la what we've done in others, which were people who were not the so-called victims of the January 6th, namely the Congress people who were there, who were not only percipient witnesses, but complaining witnesses as well.
Yeah, Mark, this is a very good point, and it's one that takes your experience and expertise to bring up, which we've talked about before, which is you're not allowed to have the victims be part of the committee that decides whether this person committed a crime or not, or these people committed a crime. It needs to be an independent group, like we have a court system. We don't have a jury filled with victims of the person who is charged with vehicular manslaughter. We have a group of peers and a judge and so on and so forth. It's interesting.
I'll give you where it intersects and where I can play this out. We're now talking, or we have talked, about the Miss Maxwell's trial in the Southern District. And now the integrity of that verdict is in play because a juror revealed that they were had experience that was untoward and sexually abused, or the victim of that, which then arguably converted people who were hesitant to convict to convict. Okay. Now, that was not a person, that juror, Kathmandu, was not a juror or was not a victim
of that person.
Epstein or Maxwell, right?
Right.
He was just a generic victim. And that is going to upset, and is already upset, the prosecutors were the one who brought it to the court's attention when he went out and did the media interviews. That affects the integrity of the judicial process and the conviction itself. So here you've got people who were actually eyewitnesses, purported victims of this, and they're now going to get into the causes of the use of speech and whether that caused people later on to invade the Capitol. I mean, does anybody else see a problem here, or have I just lost my mind?
Well, okay. So obviously it's politicized. I have thoughts on that, but is the reason that they send out subpoenas for these people, is it because they know that they have attorney-client privilege or executive privilege, and so the people decline to go in front of their tribunal, and then that night on MSNBC, they go, they wouldn't come in front of us, and there's a sort of implication of guilt there, or what do they suspect?
I mean, it is all political theater. They know they've already got Bannon, they've got Mark Meadows, they've teed up the idea that there's executive privilege. Now, you can say, well, it's ridiculous, or I don't buy it, or blah, blah, blah. The fact remains that they are Bannon, who was outside of the White House, Mark Meadows, who was inside of the White House, have both teed up the idea that there was executive privilege, that cannot be waived by a subsequent president, namely Biden. And that has to be litigated in the courts. And I don't understand what now you're going to double down on that and say, not only are we going to say that executive privilege doesn't apply, but now we're going to say attorney-client privilege doesn't apply. And is that more theater? And why, or what, to what end here, when you're, if you're a Democrat and you're 8 months shy of the midterms, why do you think that when the American public and basically your swing voters who you need to maintain the House, why do you think this is a good move politically, strategically, messaging? How does that help people who are completely frustrated by the COVID as the approval ratings are going into the tank, as people are now talking about Hillary Clinton running in 2024 and Kamala Harris having these cratering ratings, not to mention Joe Biden's. How does any of this make sense? Please explain that to me.
Well, there's a couple of things. It is a inability to change course, to correct, to take your foot off the accelerator. It's just it's a doubling down, which is a kind of a newish thing in politics. You know, at a certain point, if something isn't working and the polls are reflecting that, you have to move on. You know, if people are more interested in what's being taught in the classroom or schools being open at all or COVID or supply chain, economics, gas, you know, being north of $5 a gallon, at least in California, the border, you have to kind of go, look, those are the nuts and bolts things that people are interested in. And then people go, but I'm more in, you know, it's like if a Greek guy If a Greek guy has a McDonald's franchise, he can't serve falafels. And he can go, but I love falafels. I love the gyros. That's my food. It's like, this is a fucking McDonald's. This is what the people want. This is what they come in for. They need some McNuggets and a fillet of fish. And you go, but I love the gyros. It's like, I don't care what you love. The reason no one is coming into your McDonald's is because you got that fucking lamb on a spit and no one wants it in here. And it's like, but I love it. It's like, I don't care. And then the next argument is I'm going to make them love lamb. I am going to make those people come in here and they get their Big Macs and their supersized fries. And I'm going to use CNN and MSNBC and I'm going to convince them that lamb is the meat they need to be. The messaging is off. They're not getting the right lamb message. I'm going to build a second spit and put a second lamb on it. And it's like, they don't want your fucking food. They want this. So start serving it up. No one who's paying $5 a gallon for gas or watching illegals run across their property in Texas gives two shits about Chewbacca Man at the Capitol on the 6th. So wake the fuck up.
And by the way, it would have been, you know, I've been watching all of the people kind of cheering on my side of the aisle, the sedition charges that were brought. And all that did, by the way, in terms of timing, was further the conspiracy theories that were already out there. Like, why did it take over a year? Why all of a sudden when Ray Epps and the questions about Ray Epps were kind of compounding and gaining traction on the right, did they bring these things? Why? And by the way, I still think that we're going to find the one, if it hasn't already happened already. I was looking for it the other day and I haven't found it yet, but there's going to be defense lawyers who are going to make demands of the government for any information they've got on Epps. And if it turns out that Epps, he wasn't an agent, he wasn't a pre-existing CI, but somehow he made his way onto the FBI's most wanted list. Some way he got off of that. And I've said this before they filed the sedition charges. In fact, a couple of days before, Adam, you may remember, we said that the most likely scenario was that this was a guy who was on there and then started cooperating. And if you parse some of the things that have been released, not the least of which we did, which were the Kinzinger tweets, that was the obvious implication, that he was cooperating with the January 6th committee, but they didn't give when it was. And it clearly, I'm going to make a wild rank speculation, it wasn't during the time. He wasn't cooperating with the January 6th committee when he was on the FBI's most wanted list. And you're going to find out these things. And when people kind of mislead the public, then it's going to do nothing but double down on the conspiracy theories. And you're going to think that the JFK Jr. coming back and becoming the vice presidential nominee on the Trump ticket in 2024 makes sense compared to some of these other things. It's what inflames these conspiracy theories. And going back to what this is, the idea that you're just setting up Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and Jenna Ellis. And there's no love lost for me on any of those three, but I can step back far enough to say there's obviously going to be an attorney-client privilege and an executive privilege and a hybrid of the two that's going to be invoked. And what is the point with talking about trying to get into the discourse in the courts, by the way, where the courts can sanction them? And why are we saying we're going to go so far back, we're going to peel the onion so far back in terms of the morphology of this, that we're going to then link that to the violence? To me, it looks kind of desperate. And it gives fodder to those on the right who say it's political. I mean, it makes Kevin McCarthy look prophetic.
Well, there's a couple things. Right about the time everyone was saying, how can you charge people for an insurrection if no one's been charged for sedition? The next day, the sedition stuff all came out. So it seems the timing seems a little suspicious. But you can go back and watch hours of Hillary Clinton never conceding that she lost the election to Trump. It's Russian interference. It's Russian bots. I mean, every news outlet she was interviewed on, she said, I didn't lose. Trump stole it. Russia stole it as he colluded with Trump. And she wasn't the president. She was running for president. But Hillary Clinton never conceded the loss to Trump. She said on every show it was stolen from her. And then there was
I personally said that I didn't say the Russian collusion. Maybe I did, but I blamed James Comey in real time. I said it was outrageous what he did, blah, blah, blah. I was there. I was a pundit talking head saying
so that. There was a big violent riot when Trump was sworn in. And that group, according to this logic, could have been weaponized by Hillary Clinton saying she didn't lose the election either. There's an example of it on the other side. They didn't go to the Capitol, but there was a lot of people, a lot of violence, a lot of arrests and so on and so forth. But my bigger point is, okay, you can prove that Trump didn't think he lost the election and all his lieutenants didn't think he lost his election and they were trying to overturn the election. That still doesn't mean he's responsible for anyone who did anything violent. That is essentially like saying, I'm the coach of a soccer team. We got a bad call. The referees robbed us. And then a bunch of hooligans go out and cause chaos that night. Is the coach responsible for saying we got robbed? That was a bad call by the referee. Is he responsible for the destruction that happens that night when the drunken fans hit the street? Not in the court of law. He's not.
Well, and by the way, part of what the theory was, if people want to go back and take a look, we discussed this well before the November election, when it was. I had said at the time it appeared somewhat obvious to me that their strategy was to throw this into the House so that they could then send in electors from the states. And because Republicans controlled the independent states, I believe it was 26 of the states they held, that was what they were going to do. I mean, that was the strategy. This was not, it's ironic to me that people are now talking about that as if it's breaking news, because we weren't the only ones. There were other people who were talking about this kind of theory that they had, this legal theory that they had, that, by the way, is loosely based on a constitutional interpretation of what happens in certain situations, and that's the way the Constitution is set up. And somebody creatively thought it up. And so I get all that, and I get that somebody and the prosecutors are parsing whether or not, and want to know whether there were texts going on between the oath keepers, whether there was the White House involvement in that. I get all that. But now to say we're going to go back, we're going to dial back whether the efforts in the courts were legitimate and whether that's what set the stage for the violence, that's an awfully, you want to talk about ambitious, that's an awfully ambitious theory to attach criminal liability if that's what you're trying to do.
Well, let's not forget, Trump said, here's 20,000 guards, servicemen,
Capitol Police?
Not Capitol Police.
National Guard,
the Guard National, whatever. He said, here's 20,000 National Guardsmen. You may want to use them. And the head of the Capitol Police and Nancy Pelosi and Mayor Bowser all said, no, thanks. That's a big part of this, that the committee who's been formed to prevent this from never happening again does not want to look into. So initially, that made me suspicious. And Jim Jordan was going to bring that up, and they threw his ass off the committee. So the notion, forget about what we're doing. you have a group that's formed to prevent this from ever happening again. The thing that may have prevented it from happening was 20,000 National Guardsmen brought there to protect the Capitol, which Trump offered up and Pelosi denied and Bowser denied and the head of the Capitol Police denied. And we're supposed to believe that's the sole purpose of this committee, this never happening again, and let's look into how to prevent it from ever happening and punish those who cause it, but also to look into this never happening again. That can't be your mission statement if you don't want to examine the prevention aspect of it. There's two parts of it. In any situation that's bad, there's the sort of event, which is, you know, people were hurt, people died, people were injured, property was damaged. And then there's the part before the event where someone goes, look, you go to the concert. What was it where, not Drake, but all the
Travis Scott.
Astroworld Festival. Astroworld Festival. First you go to, well, what was Travis Scott doing on stage? Was he inciting this? What was he saying? You have to look at what that is, the event. And then you go back to how come there wasn't more security? How come there wasn't a perimeter? Who were the security? How well trained were they? There are two aspects. There's the prevent it from happening aspect, and then there's the punish those who are involved with it aspect. They don't want to look at one aspect of it, which is how could we have prevented this? That's a large part of this, and they ignore that part of it, which suggests to me this is less about preventing it happening again and more politicized.
Well, also, are you going to let Travis Scott's management team do the investigation of what happened in Astroworld? I mean, are you going to at the end of the day say, hey, I trust that you're going to let Alex Baldwin's management team do the investigation on the Rust set? Are you going to, I mean, any of these things, all you got to do is just take it out of this kind of insular world and say how in any kind of universe is does this make sense that the people who are witnesses, that the people who are culpable, whether it's Jim Jordan, if you think Jim Jordan is culpable, who are you to put him on the committee? If you're on the other end, you think Nancy Pelosi didn't do enough to prevent it, how is she appointing the committee? So why are you opening yourself up to this and setting yourself up for the idea that forevermore it's going to be a situation where you on one side, me on another side are both saying this makes absolutely no sense because I don't buy any of what they're selling.
And that's why Mark Garagos will never be on CNN ever again. A good note to go out on. All right, my
thanks,
brother.
It's lovely to meet you guys.
So until next time, Santa Kroll for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes coming soon.